This is Side Pocket, and I have another interview for you. He's been a regular at Hope, and he's a man of many achievements, including being his own mobile area code. I'm interested in you. Welcome again back to Radio Statler, Cheshire Catalyst.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So, now, we've had you before. I've interviewed you, like Man on the Street. We've had you in here, and we've talked about many things, but I realize looking back that the one thing that we've never focused on here at Radio Statler is your time at TAP for the telecom
technological assistance program.
I apologize. It's been a long day.
Yeah.
I guess my first background is were you the first one doing that? Were you the last one doing that? Like, how did you get into all of that?
I was the last editor of TAP. It fell into my lap and it fell through my fingers. I apologize to the world for it. And
so how to use it.
The thing is that I grew up in Rochester, New York, the home of the Rochester Telephone Company, which was at the time the nation's largest independent telco.
And currently has a vibrant 2600 scene up there from what I've seen.
I didn't know. I'd like to go visit sometime.
Yeah, we actually have one guy here who's not only Rochester 2600, but they do a B-sides up there.
That
often falls on my birthday for no reason. So. But yeah, so you were part of that scene back. What time is this?
Well, this was back in the early 70s, and I subscribed to YIPL, the Youth International Party Line.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the Army when the Esquire article came out, October 1971.
For the big phone freak expose, right?
True. That's when I first heard about Captain Crunch, and never knowing I would get to meet him later on.
As many have.
Become good friends with John Draper.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I learned about the YIPL newsletter, the Youth International Party Line, which was set up by Abby Hoffman of the Chicago 7 fame, and a friend of his from Long Island who called himself Al Bell.
Mm.
It went for a couple of years. And then Al Bell looked at his newsletter one day and said, "What's all this political crap doing in my technical newsletter?" He picked it up, moved it out of Bleecker Street, the digs of the YIP, the Youth International Party, moved it up to a place on Broadway where he could rent some cheap office space, and that's where he set up TAP, the Technological, excuse me, sorry, too much beer already, the Technological Assistance Party.
Mm.
But then he had a problem.
Okay, what was the problem?
Back in those days, they couldn't open a bank account unless they were a bona fide political party.
Ah.
And so the newsletter changed its name to TAP, the Technological Assistance Program. And that's how it was known for many years.
Isn't it amazing how you change a few choice words around and all of a sudden it has a completely different meaning in our very flimsy and confusing legal system?
This is true.
This is very true. So you managed it, it fell into your lap, like, what was it, like?
Oh, by that time, no, I was still just a subscriber then.
So you were a fan for a while. What attracted you to the publication?
I was a phone freak. I was a kid that played with telephones from age 12 on. And, from age 8 on, I was interested in space stuff, Sputnik and what have you. In 1975, I wound up with a job in Boston, Mass.
Mm-hmm.
I lived up there for about a year. And the job then died. I wound up helping out with the science fiction convention, putting on their computer games exhibit.
Do you remember the name of that convention?
BossCon.
Oh, cool.
It's the major con in the Boston area, held every February.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was going to help put on the computer games exhibit. Mm-hmm. And a shop had opened up in Burlington, Mass. Called the Computer Store. They sold this little thing called an Altair 8800.
Ah, yes.
So I drove up
there. Machine.
Said, "Listen, why don't you bring down an Altair to our convention? We'll throw, let me get that book off the shelf here. 101 Basic Computer Games by David L. Oh, Lunar Lander. It's only, 100 lines of code, basic code. I can just tap that in. We'll take it to the convention. We'll show off the computers, and maybe we'll sell you a couple of them." So I would load the 24-step instructions through the front panel. That would bootstrap BASIC from paper tape from the Model 33 teletype. I would then type in a few lines of code. Oh, here's a customer. I have to show off the computer now. So I would save off the program to paper tape. I would load in the demo program, show the customer the demo, load the program back in,
right,
tap in a few more lines,
And the process went on and on.
Yeah, it went on. The guys at the store got to see that, one, I could handle the customers.
Right.
Two, I was pretty good with the computer.
Right.
They were so top-heavy with relatives in their store that they just didn't have room for me. But a few weeks after the convention, I got this phone call. Listen, Ozzy, we hate to send anyone into that hellhole of a town, but we got a guy in New York City who wants to open up a franchise store on 39th Street near 6th Avenue. Would you be interested in going down there and working for him? Well, let me see, Fred. I've got Lily, who came up for the convention, who's scheming and conniving any way to get me down for just weekends. And
I met those people.
Yeah, I think I could be convinced. Sure, I'll go to that whole of the town, where I know all the science fiction fans down there already, and where I've got friends. And sure, yeah, I'll go. So I moved to New York in 76.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about a year later that I finally found the time on a Wednesday afternoon to go down to the tap office, having, moved my subscription from Rochester to Boston to New York.
Right, that way you can get everything.
So I knew about the meetings on the Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I was instrumental in moving the meetings to Fridays.
Really?
Yes, because I explained to Tom Edison, who ran the publication by then, that, if we have it on Fridays, people might come in for the weekend.
Right.
And we could get them to come down to the office and help out with all the volunteer things you want us to do down here.
Mm-hmm.
And he went along with that. And that's why the 2600 meetings are on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
As a continuation of the TAP meetings.
Interesting, yeah. Because one of the things I really love about, 2600, and when we briefly had the Yippie Cafe, I got to see this mm-hmm. firsthand, is that a lot of people don't realize that the general, computer hacking scene and Spartan in the phone freaking scene and the Yippies all have a common ancestor. If you had to trace it genetically, mm-hmm. there's a point where they intersected in. So a lot of people think, Anonymous is this new crazy thing, or 2600 has been going on for a while and that started. It's no. Things go after things after things. It's all about passing it on.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you got everything moved over and you started going to the meetings.
Started going to the Wednesday afternoons and then the Fridays. By that time, the magazine was still going. Tom Edison ran it.
Mm-hmm.
And he really couldn't afford to keep up the office, so he moved everything out to his home in New Jersey.
Well, you know where in New Jersey?
I have a sneaking idea, but I really don't want to.
That's perfectly fine. No, just because we keep doing a New Jersey theme every time we're on here. That's what I wanted to ask, so go on.
Well, this one day I get a phone call from him, and he says, Cheshire, listen, I just got home to find that my apartment had been broken into and firebombed. I need to get all this crap out of my basement,
mm-hmm.
either come in and get all my TAP newsletter stuff or it goes in the dumpster. So me and my roommate of the day,
mm-hmm.
We rented a truck, we went out there, we hauled everything back to my place, stored everything in my basement, and we started publishing the TAP newsletter out of my place.
Well, what sort of resources did you have in order to publish that thing?
Minimal. But you have to realize it was a minimal publication.
Right.
It was laid out on, 4 8.5 by 11 sheets. Actually, it was 11 by 17 sheets. We then photocopied down to 8.5 by 11s. It was actually published on 11 by 17 sheets and then folded in half. And two issues were published at once, so they could be folded into one mailing and then sent out to the subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
I did something clever. We had a bunch of subscribers in Europe.
So really? That's how far it reached.
Oh, yeah. So what I would do is I would take a bunch of the envelopes that were headed for Europe,
mm-hmm.
put them in a box. I would go to the United Nations Post Office on First Avenue, and I would buy UN Post Office at the Geneva, Switzerland rate,
mm-hmm.
stamp all those envelopes, put them in the box with a note, "Dear Postmaster, please accept the enclosed for mailing, which are already standing and ready for putting in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
We simply would like to have your Geneva postmark on them."
Mm-hmm.
And so we got the within Europe rate for all of those mailings by sending the one box overseas.
Mm-hmm. But before I go to the next question, we actually do have an interesting question from IRC. Retinox, and I apologize if I screwed up your name here, wants to know if you are also involved with the TEL or the telephone electronics line, and if not so, what would be the difference between those two?
TEL was a California publication. We were based out of New York City, and I actually had a letter published in their magazine.
Cool.
If you ever go through back issues, you might find a letter by Osbert Kilgallen of Rochester, New York, from P.O. Box 9486, was it? I forget it. You know, but it's in there.
We know the name, so yeah.
But Osbert Kilgallen was the name of a minor character in the novel Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein.
Yes.
And I had picked that as my code name. Mm-hmm. And but when I got to New York and worked with the TAP newsletter, I was publishing an article on hacking. I forget what the article was on. But I was being pasted up opposite an article on Marisat, the maritime communications satellite. Somebody had been just spoofing the operators to get calls to ships at sea.
Oh.
Well, Osbert Kilgallen was a name I had used in communicating via telex to ships at sea. It was a name that Marisat knew about.
Right.
And I'm thinking, oh, damn, if they see that name,
they go everywhere.
Well, they'll think that I'm spoofing those Marisat operators. I'm not getting into that. I need a new name. Oh, what was that name I came up with in chemistry class back in high school? Of course, Cheshire Catalyst. Now is the time to bring that name out of the closet and start using that.
So that's the story behind the now infamous Pandal.
Yes.
Have you ever thought about that, since now we're in this era, that if you tried to exit out, you would go back to the old one again just to confuse the hell out of people?
No, because these days, well, everyone knows that the Cheshire Catalyst is Richard Cheshire.
Yeah.
But a third level of abstraction, strictly for privacy purposes, never occurs to most people.
Mm.
But the word has been out for a few decades now that my real name is Ozzy Osband.
Yeah.
Osband.
It's funny because that already sounds like a hacker name anyhow.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But, you know, my identity's been out there for so long that I don't think I'd go back to anything else. Richard Cheshire and the Cheshire Catalyst is now my hacker identity.
Mm-hmm.
Ozzy Osband is the name I use on the internet for my personal stuff.
I'm like the same way, because I always tell people, they're like, ooh, you're awesome, why did I call you? And it's like, a lot of people around here, because through the internet stuff, know me as Side Pocket. You can just call me Jordan. I go by both. I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
So to get a bit more track back on tap, so you were running on stuff through minimal resources. I can imagine that the mailing list, the amount of subscribers, was ridiculous.
Oh, we had a few hundred subscribers.
What was the strangest location that you would have to mail out to?
I don't recall offhand. I mean, subscribers all over America.
All over the place.
All over Canada. As I say, we had a number of...
Canada.
Europe. Yeah. I think there were probably a few Asian countries as well, but they would have just gone in the regular post.
Did anyone try to send you information about the phone systems up in Canada, or they just loved reading what was going on in America?
I believe there were some articles published out of Toronto and Vancouver, but it's been so long.
That's fine. That's fine. It's kind of like trying to get a manual to quote 2600 issues, after you have so many children.
Yeah.
So, as much as I don't want to make you relive potentially painful memories of your life, when did this all started winding down and starting to realize that, maybe it had its good run and that this should be that?
It had its good run, but I'm a lousy businessman.
And, so am I.
I just ran it into the ground and just couldn't afford to run it anymore.
What did you spend too many on resources, or you just couldn't manage all the people anymore?
Well, shortly after the Tom Edison house burning, the police said that it was a very professional break-in, but the fire marshal said it was a very amateur arson.
Mm.
It is well known, or was well known in those days, that telephone companies were really good at hiring their security people fresh out of the FBI.
Oh, yeah.
They would have contacts who would be very good burglars, but
just
probably not so good arsonists.
It's amazing how things haven't changed. A lot of people hire people, contract people right out of Darknet, and that's the new frontier. It's same concept, different place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was always our suspicion, was that it was set up and what have you. But they didn't realize that all the TAP stuff was in the basement and nowhere near the fire. But I got it out of there, and we kept it going for another year or so. What I did do with some of the money that Tom Edison did have was I took a trip to Geneva, Switzerland.
Oh.
Yep. 1971. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. It was around 1979. Mm-hmm. No, excuse me. It was the 80s. It was 1983. And then tapped out the following year in 84.
We're going to guess which one's the right one, audience. That's fine.
Telecom 83 mm-hmm. was a major every four-year telecommunications conference in Geneva, Switzerland, the home of the International Telecommunications Union.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I took a trip to the ITU mm-hmm. Headquarters and the major international trade show mm-hmm. just to show up at the AT&T booth and say, hi, we're
Remember
still
me?
Around.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully to embarrass the hell out of them and what have you. And just to, you know, give them the impression, sorry, you didn't stop us yet.
Yeah.
But I couldn't keep it going. And mm-hmm. I've apologized to it over the years. But
So what was your, like, out of your run that you remember? Actually, maybe we do both. What is your favorite thing that you saw published when you were just a subscriber? And what was your favorite thing do you remember that you published when you were running it?
The annual race.
Really?
The race between Tap,
yeah.
And the Yipster Times. Which one of us could publish the annual credit card numbers first? And they had a faster publication schedule than we had, so they usually published first, but we were, you know, slightly more accurate.
I love that it's like you guys are like upset of getting like published first, but for law enforcement it was like Alien versus Predator, whoever wins, they lose.
Yeah. That was fun.
Wait,
we had
legit?
One year. Yeah. We had one year when we actually got the information before the end of the previous year.
Oh.
We had a fellow in England who had gotten the information from British Telecom and mailed it to us. And so that was the year that we beat the Yipster Times to publication.
Nice, nice, nice.
It went out in our December issue.
Were you like just like kind of like business rivals, or were they like, or were you like actually like met some of them? And
we were still pals.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd get invited down to Bleecker Street once in a while.
It was just more like a whole DEF CON thing where it's like two different sides, but it's like, look, we're all serving the same community.
Yeah.
We're just trying to one-up each other because that's how you get better at things.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Just friendly rivalry.
So I'm pretty sure that when you were like, okay, so I'm going to walk away from this, and, you know, it had its thing, and, you know, I did what I did, and that
and
was
at
that.
At the time, that was 1984,
yeah.
Which you may now realize right. is the year of the publication yep. starting at 2600
yep.
magazine.
With that ratty computer that had a mouse, not a computer mouse, an actual mouse in it later on, but yeah. So
that.
Literally, like, one thing I love about the freaking hack community is like the phoenix rising from the ashes, because mm-hmm. real quick aside, I love when people are talking about stuff like, oh, phone phreaking, that was like that thing that happened, and you had the blue box and the red box, and like, it's like, no, it's just like anything else. It's still going on. It's like you see your cell phone. You see all the crazy cellular data stuff going on and the apps being used and the stuff. Mm-hmm. What I feel like personally they literally did was they were like, okay, these bastards with the tones. They understand our tonal system. If we move it over to digital frontiers and put security on it, that would do it, forgetting, hey, it's digital now. You know all the people who are really good at hacking computers? Guess what you have now is your phone line system. And this is the new age reborn again.
Actually, that was almost the topic of my talk.
You had a talk earlier about that.
Yeah, I titled it The Future of Freaking, mm-hmm. with PHs on both. Mm-hmm. And basically saying that, well, describing what was phone freaking?
Yeah.
Exploring the network.
Right.
Because AT&T never wanted you to explore the network. They just wanted you to use it the way they intended it.
Yeah, and collect all the money you have in bulk.
And, but we as phone freaks, you know, we had this device in our house. Yeah. It went out to the world, and so we started exploring that. Well, the world is changing.
Mm-hmm.
The PSTN, the Public Switched Telephone Network,
right.
is now evolving into a world of VOIP,
right.
Voice Over Internet Protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And I throw out these acronyms because people should know what they mean,
yep.
and I like to include the explanation of what those acronyms
that's
mean.
That's why when you hear tones touching or the buzz in the background, that's generated, because technically, if I remember correctly, it doesn't technically need that, but because a lot of people grew up on that, they still leave that in there as like signifiers.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
That's what I've heard.
actually, it's because people are still using touch tones for making communications over their cellular lines.
Mm-hmm.
particularly when you were trying to get through an IVR system, an interactive voice response system, mm-hmm. that says, please press the 4-digit extension of your party.
Right.
And so that takes the touch tones.
Right.
Going over that voice circuit that still carries those tones.
Mm-hmm.
So, crosstalk from those circuits mm-hmm. will then filter into your other phone calls.
So from that era in the 80s when you had to walk away from it, mm-hmm. and then between that and now that you're here now sitting in a booth with penis drawings everywhere talking on Radio Statler, I know so many people who, like, now you can find, like, digitized upload versions of the different issues and people that try backlog. How has been your experience of these people, whether they were around, like, your age or whether they're the younger people coming up who, like, are like, hey, I remember that and that you were a part of that. Like, how has been that experience with that, the legacy?
They want to know how to do some of that stuff, and the network doesn't work that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a way where you can play as if it worked that way.
Right.
ProjectMF.org has set up an asterisk box. Now, asterisk is something new. It's part of the modern era, and it's something people should be getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Asterisk was designed by a Linux developer named Mark Spencer,
mm-hmm.
Out of Huntsville, Alabama. And I not only put him on a pedestal,
yeah.
I put his pedestal next to the one for Almon Strowger, who developed the first rotary dial telephone.
Right.
Now, Stroger's story is interesting. He was an undertaker in Kansas City, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
and his problem was that the telephone operator at the central switchboard was the girlfriend of his rival across town.
I love how these...
So, someone would die in Kansas City,
right.
The newly bereaved relatives would pick up the phone, "Hello, Central, please connect me to the undertaker." She, of course, would connect him to her boyfriend
right.
across town. Stroger found out about this. Necessity, as they say, is the mother of invention.
Right.
Stroger designed and built the first rotary dial telephone system.
Mm-hmm.
It was an automatic system, and Bell was looking for such things at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The trick is that because Stroger developed this system to get past the mm-hmm. telephone operator, that was his objective,
yep.
we consider him the very first phone freak.
Nice. Very appropriate.
And now... you've got Mark Spencer, who created the Digium Corporation,
right?
Which creates circuit boards for IBM PCs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an old PC collecting dust in a closet,
yep.
you insert one circuit card that connects to the telco side
right,
wire.
Yeah.
You can put in the other circuit the other card one, that connects yeah. to your telephone extensions.
Yep.
And you now have a basic business PBX, a private
right.
branch exchange that you can have as your own home telephone system.
Mm-hmm.
Including the IVR, the interactive voice response, press 1 for the bedroom, press 2 for the den.
Right. Before I get into stuff, we actually have two questions from IRC.
Okay.
One is actually very interesting. Someone just asked, Renan Knox asked, maybe you know him, I'm not sure, this name does ring a bell to me, unfortunately, pun semi-attended. Whatever happened to Milo Phone Bill?
Milo Phone Bill.
Milo. I apologize, Milo.
Right, all right. He was one of the people that wrote for TAP,
mm-hmm.
and quite honestly, I couldn't tell you.
Aw.
If people have any idea, write to me at Cheshire@2600.com, and I'll try and put together something mm-hmm. for 2600 about these people, mm-hmm. if I can get the information. But I really haven't kept track of people at all. And I apologize for that. But,
this is why, as like the hacker community and phone freaking community, it's important that we like keep connections and like archive, because like even when you've lived through it, I mean, I've lived through like the internet like late 80s and mm-hmm. mid 90s with dialing through BBS systems through an acoustic modem, and then actually having a machine that connected this thing called the web back in like late 93, if I remember correctly.
Oh, wow.
And like, surely. Yeah, and like, even though I lived through that, I still find stuff that I didn't know even existed when I was going around. So it's like the archaeology method, and even though it makes me feel old and probably makes you feel old, but that sort of stuff is like very important, because the more we learn of our past, the more we can figure out going in our future. And the last one that everyone's been asking literally every single thing that we do, don't worry, it's nothing obscene, is simply, what is your favorite drink? It could be alcoholic, non-alcoholic. Every time, FizzSec always asks, what's your favorite drink of everyone? So what is your favorite drink? What is the drink of the phone freak, Chester Callis?
Well, I'm partial to Coca-Cola, the official soft drink of the FIFA World Cup.
We just did an interview with Dent, who's like the youngest person we've had here, and that was his choice of drink.
Ah, well.
So it's interesting of like full circle, of like, you know, no matter what age or background stuff, you can find all sorts of things like going around in common.
Well, the reason I say the thing about the FIFA World Cup, back in 94, they came around looking for volunteers for this World Cup thing they were doing in the States.
Yeah.
I was living near Orlando, Florida, which is maybe one of the venues for this thing. And I got to thinking, golly, what American is right mind would volunteer for? Wait a minute. I'm not right, my right mind. Hello. So I ran down. I found out when they were going to hold a gathering for signing up volunteers. Walked in. They had enough people to work computers. Ross Perot, EDS Corporation, was sponsor for computers.
Yeah, he'd be able to provide everything for that. Yeah.
What else can you do, kid? Well, I'm a ham radio operator. Well, have we got a job for you? I became the chief radio operator at the Citrus Bowl for the World Cup.
Awesome.
Yep.
I did not know that.
I support the World Cup and I support soccer because it's someplace where the U.S. is joining the world in something.
Right.
Not just shoving our stuff down people's throats like we usually do.
And it's also great to support a sport that was partially inspired by kicking severed heads around, which is even more confusing of why it's not more popular in America than it is, considering that background.
Yes.
Well, once again, Chester, you've been... you know, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, Chester, it was back in the day, but you've been a consistent thing for freaking, hacking, and hopes, past, present, and future. It's always a pleasure to have you on Radio Statler. Thank you for coming by, talking about TAP. Is there any final words to say? Any way people can reach you if they have cool ideas for Project MF or future things?
Well, if they want to reach me, I need to explain the story of how I got my area code.
Sure, do that real quick. Everyone, one more time. I love this story. Go.
Well, back around 1999, they went around the Orlando area talking about how there was split 407. Back then. And, that got my interest up. I went up on the internet and I found NANPA, the North American Numbering Plan Administration. And I found their website and I found the list. Now, you know the list, 201 New Jersey, 202 DC, blah, blah, blah.
908,
blah. But there were gaps marked available for geographic relief.
Okay.
And I found one, 321. That sounds familiar. Why is... Oh, of course, the countdown. And here I live near Cape Canaveral, the countdown capital of the world.
The final countdown.
Golly. Now I know what area code I want to have. It's time to bring down my web browser, bring up my word processor, and begin preparing my testimony for the Public Service Commission hearing. I showed up there, scared shitless. Somebody else was going to come up with it first. Because it's just too simple an idea.
Right.
Well... it's a simple idea once it's been pointed out.
Right.
I was the one that pointed it out.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I look at it is, I asked for it.
Right.
They approved it. Doesn't that mean it's my area code?
Right.
But I share.
Right.
However, I saved the best number for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who needs to reach me can simply dial 321 liftoff.
Woo!
Now, I admit, I did have to email the fellow who was then president of Bell South Mobility at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I simply explained, it's my area code.
Right.
He let me have it. You see, the number...
It is nice.
Well, I dialed the number, of course.
Right.
I got a recording. The number you have reached at Bell South Mobility is not currently in service.
Ooh, cool.
Yes.
I ran right down to the mall.
Right.
And said, listen, I've got this bag phone. Mm-hmm. Could I please get 543-8633 put on the bag phone?
Yeah.
Well, she picks up the phone. She dials the Melbourne office. Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but the boys in Melbourne tell me that that number is in the middle of a 100 group on a corporate rate. Totally unavailable. Oh, okay.
What rate?
Went home, got up on the internet, bellsouthmobility.com. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. About the company. Good. Mark Field is the president. Good information, no, but I need an email address.
Yes.
Let me see. Oh, press room. What could I find there? Well, let's look at a J. Random press release. There's what I'm looking for. The format of an email address.
Right.
First name underscore last name at. Aha.
There
Mark
we go.
Mark underscore Fiedler at dear Mr. Fiedler. Blah, blah, blah. May I please have 543, thing about the area code. Explain how I got the area code. Please have it so that as of November 1st, 1999, my phone number would be 321 liftoff. Send. Look at my watch. Oh, damn. 6 p.m. on a Friday.
Oh, yeah. He's not entering that
possibly,
for days.
Yeah. Sunday afternoon, you have mail. Sure enough, I'll get my people on it. And he did. I got the number.
That's awesome. That's what happens, by the way, out there, is a lesson where you do perseverance and you do some research. You apply something batshit crazy. And you know what? Sometimes it does work.
Sometimes.
Sometimes it does
Pure
work.
Pure timing. really was.
Your time. And once again, it's always a pleasure to have the Cheshire Catalyst, Ozzy, the other Ozzy, as we also call him, here at Rio Statler. Thank you for stopping by. I believe that next you are actually leading into what we call the biohacking hour, or possibly half an hour, with a bunch of awesome biohackers, otherwise known as grinders. So stay tuned for that later on only on Radio Statler.